Okay, so let's start. Let's start with Perk Chi, and I guess I want to do a few goals. I want Perk Chi. Much more. So, the one thing which I really want to highlight, this is not going to be too exciting this year. I really just want to cover the story of Avimelech, but I want to point out a few things because things start to change with Avimelech. Starting from, we already got through the Mashal, I believe. So that would put us at verse 22, which we discussed slightly. Chapter 9, verse 22. Vayasar Avimelech al Yisrael shaloshanim. And by the way, Rashi notices this strange language, Vayasar, as opposed to Vayishpot. I think that the message is clear. He was a ruler, and yet Shmuel, or whatever editor it is, Shmuel or any editor, it doesn't really matter, is obviously trying to make a very strong point about how he feels about Avimelech, and they are not willing to give him the title of Shofet, El Sar. So they create hatred between Shechem, the rulers of Shechem, and Avimelech. In verse 24, it says to pay back. This is really this is sort of a prophetical, not really prophetical, but it's criticism or commentary, religious commentary from the author, from Shmuel, saying that essentially you can't get away with murder and not have it bite you. Chafhei 25 is something very interesting happened. Vayasimu lo balei shchem arvim al rashei ha'arim. So they put up morvim or ambushes. So you would think that they're waiting for Avimelech to come. So the first question is, where's Avimelech? Isn't he in the city? So as we're going to find out, he's not in the city. He's not ruling in Shechem at all. Shechem may be his power base, but we'll find out he's actually ruling in a different city, which makes sense because he's not a single city ruler. He's a ruler of Israel. But what's interesting is these Moravim are not to capture him. The pasuk goes on to say, "Vayigzulu et kol asher yavor aleihem badarech vayugad la'avimelech." Essentially, what they would do is they would bring. Generally, finances for the king were paid for by, let's say, donations. Although I think donations would be a slightly comical word. Donation would be sort of like the way Social Security taxes a donation. It's not exactly a donation. It's a, it's a donation, but you go to jail if you. Yeah, well, it's FICA actually stands for, what does FICA stand for? Federally? Federal Insurance. There's something that sounds actually quite voluntary about it. I forget what it is. Something in the word FICA, I can't remember what it is, but something implies...
Assistance?
What's that?
Is the last word assistance?
I'm not sure, but it implies that there is a certain, option to it, but of course there's no option to it. So here, too, the king had his minchot, his tributes, and he would receive it. What they would do, essentially, is the tributes that were apparently coming in to the capital city of Shechem, they simply ripped them off, highway robbers. And then Shechem, Avimelech would show up and say, where's my money? They'd say, I don't know, some highway robbers took the money, and we had no, we don't know what happened to it, what are you going to do? So it's all very cloak and dagger. What I'd like to focus on, we could read pasuk by pasuk, that'll be a little boring. So I wanted to focus essentially on something I've been hinting to, which is that Gidon as the antithesis to Avimelech as the antithesis to Gidon, really ripping apart everything Gidon had done. So if you take a look in this chart, I've cited 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cases by Avimelech, where essentially it mocks almost, either mimics or sometimes mocks what went on by Gidon. So the first one is the assassination. So he gets the support of Balei Shechem. This happens in chapter 9, verse 4. So he says to his mother's family, he says, really, you want me to rule you because I'm your brother. So in verse 4 it says, Vayitnu lo shivim kesem beit baal brit. So they managed to get together 70 silver pieces. And with those 70 silver pieces, he manages to put together an assassination team that's willing to kill 70 people. So essentially that comes out to one silver piece per head. So the nastiness of it is already implied. But this same giving of money to the ruler exists in both cases by Gidon and Avimelech. But by Avimelech, when Gidon said, I'd like to ask you for money, they gave 1,700 gold pieces, what they were willing to donate. Avimelech, what he managed to get together, was 70 silver pieces. So I think the comparison, if that was the only comparison, it wouldn't be much of a comparison. But as we see, there will be a lot. But if there are comparisons. If the Navi, if Shmuel is trying to compare one to the other, this disparagement, this disparity of what sums were given to each ruler, I think, is indicative of the type of support they had with the various rulership. The fact that he can only manage to get together 70 silver pieces, and therefore he had to hire the worst of the worst to kill his brothers, I think, is indicative. The second item by Avimelech on the left-hand side, second item, is V'amlichu et Avimelech lemelech im elon mutzav asher b'shchem. Where did they anoint him? They anointed him by the tree, which is by the altar, the matzeva, asher b'shchem. So there's two interesting things to note. First of all, we know which elon this is. This is the elon that Yaakov buried his stuff under, and that Yoshua shows up to again to reread them the rites. We've sort of met this elon before. But what's interesting is, whereas Gidon destroys the Asherah, which is the tree, and destroys the single stone Mizbeach to create a multiple rock Mizbeach, Avimelech, in the same image, is sort of reappointed king, which is everything that Gidon served to destroy as far as Avodah Zarah. Avimelech reestablishes through these Baal Brit people who we've discussed previously. The third one is also, I think, interesting, which is what Avimelech...
Where did the Elon come from if Gidon had destroyed it?
Oh, this is a different one. This is Elon in Shechem.
Wasn't the Elon...
No, Gidon lived in Ophrah.
Oh, right.
Lived in Ophrah. Yeah. This is probably a famous Elon that they buried all of the idol worship under, and apparently became sort of a symbol of idol worship. Why didn't they destroy the Elon? Yeah, you're here in Shechem. It's sort of this early Judaism phase. Things are not clearly defined. You have this whole group of people in Shechem that's not quite Jewish and not quite not. So they have these old vestiges of Avodah Zarah. But it's just interesting that essentially, the image that we're given when Avimelech rises to power is almost an antithetical image to the one that Gidon rises to power with.
When you cut and paste from the wherever you get this, is there a way to do it without Hashem's name, or
I take it from a place with Hashem's name, because unfortunately it's the only one that I can find that's Minukad. Mm-hmm. I'll take it though and put it in Shishema.
Right.
The third one, I'll read the third one. Let's find that in Sukkim, because I think you might find it interesting what's going on there. And in this way, by going step by step, we'll wind up doing old Parakchi anyway. Sounds about right. I got to find it myself. Yeah. Vayavo Gal Ben Eved. Let's start with Chafav. Vayavo Gal Ben Eved. This is, according to Mepharshim, is a non-Jew. Ve'echav. Vayavru B'Shchem. So essentially there's this foreign band of power brokers that come into Shchem. Vayiv Techuvo Balei Shchem. And now Balei Shchem, keep in mind that Gidon's not there. And they've been ripping off Gidon's money. And now this guy, who's apparently a powerful guy with brothers... Did I say Gidon? Yeah, Avimelech. That's a bad mistake. And apparently this Gal Ben Eved, who's something of a warrior, he's got his brothers with him, and essentially Baal Yishchem wants him as a leader. Vayitzu Hasadeh, they go out, all of them. So the assumption is Baal Yishchem and Gal Ben Eved. Vayibtsuru et karmehem, they do btsir on karmehem, which means they gather in the grapes of their vineyards. Vayidrachu, and they stomp the grapes. Vayasu hilulim. So what is hilulim? It's a little bit from the word halal, but I think that you can more think of it as in terms of a bacchanal, right? The wine flows in a celebratory way. It's a little bit like Noah as he comes off of his ark.
That's not good.
No, it's a very negative phrase. Vayavo beit Elohim, and they come drunk, essentially. They're drunk to the house of their God. Vayochlu v'yishtu, and they drink and they eat and they drink. Vayikalu et Avimelech, and they curse Avimelech. Vayomer Gal ben Eved, mi Avimelech u mi Shechem, who is Avimelech and who is Shechem? Ki na'avdenu, that we should serve them. Halo ben Yerubal, he is the son of Yerubal. Uzvul b'kido, and he's got a general here, by the way, in Shechem named Zvul. Apparently a non-Jew from the name. Ivdu et anshei chamor avi Shechem. You should worship the people of Chamor, the father of Shechem. Madu anavdenu anachnu. A very difficult pasuk. But let's continue on. Who will give this nation, which means this fighting force of Shechem, into my hands? I'll take care of, I'll get rid of Avimelech. I'll take care of him for you. And they said to Avimelech, Rabat Tzava'acha Vatzea, gather together your armies and go. Now Avimelech is not there. So I don't know whether they're so drunk that they don't know what's going on, but Avimelech is not there. How do we know that Avimelech is not there? Because Zvul hears what they say. Vayishman Zvul Sarair at Divrei Gal ben Eved. Zvul, and what's funny is, Zvul is the general, but apparently they're pressuring Zvul to follow them rather than Avimelech. And Zvul probably says, oh yeah, absolutely, I'll follow you, Gal ben Eved. I'm with you. He knows which side his bread is buttered on, but what happens is, Vayicharapo, Vayishman Zvul, Sarair at Divrei Gal ben Eved. So they didn't say it to him, but he was around Shkantir. Vayicharapo, he gets ready. Vayishlach Malachim El Avimelech B'tor Malaymor. They send Malachim to Avimelech in Torma Lemor. Now, in Torma is a difficult word. According to the Ralbag, it's the name of a place, but that's not Mashma. The way that the Targum Yonatan and most of the other Mepharshim follows, it's Bimirma, that he sent it in secretly. Hine Gal ben Eved ve'cha ba'im Shchema. Look at these guys that came Shchema. Yinam Tsarim et Ha'ir. They've created an enemy city. Alecha v'ata kum laila. Get up at night. Ata va'am asher itcha. And bring your armies. Ve'ro b'sadeh. And you shall... The Erov Basaneh. I don't know why it uses the first person when it really means you should lay down an Erov?
An
ambush in the field. Thank you. Now let's backtrack a little bit to the difficult Pasuk, which is in Kaf Chet. And then I'll get to the comparisons with Gidom. It says, Vayomer Gal ben Eved, Mi Avimelech Umi Shechem Ki Navdenu. Who is Avimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve them? The reason why that's a difficult pasuk should be obvious, because Mi Shechem, Balei Shechem are now supporting Gal ben Eved. So why does he say Mi Avimelech Umi Shechem Ki Na'avdenu, that we should serve them? But who is Shechem in this case? So the Mepharshim have a very difficult time with this, and this is what they say. But they do it's a rough cut job on the pasuk, but this is how they translate the pasuk. The pasuk is Chav Zayin. Yeah. Okay. So Rashi says like this: Mi Avimelech Umi Shechem. Mi Avimelech Lihiyot Sar Shel Shechem. Who is Avimelech that he should be the officer of Shechem? So Rashi essentially takes away the second key, right? Or the second me.
It's poetic. It's a little bit poetic.
Yeah. And then he says Umi Shechem Lihiyot Avadim Avimelech. So now Rashi knows he has a problem because he took out the word me. So he puts back the word meat, saying, who is Shechem that he should serve Avimelech?
What kind of guys are we to be serving Avimelech?
Correct. The difficulty with that, and by the way, the Radak follows the same logic, Mi Avimelech Umi Shechem, so he says, Klomar, that is to say, Avimelech v'Shechem. He does a different job. He says, Avimelech and Shechem are synonymous. Shehayat Sar Ha'ir Mikedem. So when they're saying Shechem, they don't really mean Shechem, they mean Avimelech. The reason why he has to do that is Rashi is incredibly difficult in light of the pasuk in Malachim. So if you have a Malachim where the kingdom splits, which is in Perek Malachim, it's in 1 Kings Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, after Rehoboam says no deal to the northern tribes, he's not going to lighten their load. So, what do they say when they've decided to split off from them? It says, oh, maybe it's Yud Bet. Run. Hold on a second. Yeah, if you take a look, it's not exactly the same language. But if you look at verse in chapter 11, verse 16, where they break off, it says, "Vayar Yisrael and all of Israel saw, ki lo shama melech aleihem, Rechavam, the king of, the son of Shlomo, is not listening to him. Vayashivu am et amelech, davar leimor, and they return a message to Rechavam. They say, malanu chelek b'David, velo nachala b'ben Yishai. We are not part of David. Neither are we part of Ben Yishai." So you have this sort of double language that we are not under you, and we are also not under you.
Which
a two-way surfer. That's correct, which is close to the Radak. Rashi is very difficult because we, and this language, by the way, appears again in Shmuel Bet, when there's a guy, a nowsy guy named, who led the rebellion against it? Not Yehu. In Shmuel Bet, after David kills his son, or after Absalom dies, he comes back, and there's a guy by the name of, you remember his name? I'm losing it right now. Yeah, exactly. It's like Shimmy, but it's not. Hold on, I'll find it.
Jimmy?
not Shimmy. It's really, I've lost it. Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri used the same language. Mi David, mi ben Yishai. So apparently, it's this language of a rejection, which is why Rashi is very difficult. So what Radak tries to do, he's trying to say, oh, the Shechem that I mean, umi Shechem, that's the same as Gidom, but you people of Shechem, sorry. I have a real problem there tonight. You, like, that is Shechem is synonymous with Avimelech. Let me read the rest of the Radak.
Don't you think that Ben Yishai could be, rather than, you're saying David and his descendants.
Exactly right. So here, what it should mean, theoretically, is who is, using the same language, who is Avimelech, and who is his power base, Shechem, that we should serve them. That's exactly the parallel. That is, who is this one guy, and who is this whole people that we should serve them? But what's difficult there is, they're the people. So who are they referring, who are they speaking against? They can't be speaking against themselves, which is why Rashi takes apart the whole thing. He just says, Umi Shechem, and who are we, Shechem, that we should serve, that we should serve Avimelech. So it's a very difficult language.
But it doesn't seem to me that Gal ben Eved is from Shechem.
He's not, you're right, but he's talking to Shechem, you're absolutely right.
Well, he's talking to the rebels in Shechem.
Well, that, well, we know who's supporting him. Vayibtchuvo in pasuk 26. Vayibtchuvo balei Shechem. So we know who's supporting him. And they're the officers of Shechem. Now there are various people try to solve this, but I don't really have a problem with this pasuk, and I'm going to base this on a shiur that I gave previously. If you remember, there were always two. Hi, honey, how are you? There were always two groups in Shechem. There were. And you know what? And let me prove it to you, because it's very significant, and it gets involved in the whole Dina story. I don't want to go too detailed in the Dina story, but I'll already show you that among Shechem there are political schisms. So I'll take you back to Bereshit.
But you said they weren't Jewish.
They're not. Neither of them are. But there's the discrepancies between them. So what I'd like to do is take you to Bereshit. I think Perek Lamed Gimel. Yeah, very end of Lamed Gimel says it's verse 33, chapter 33, verse 18. This is right before the Dina story. It says Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. He comes complete. Very difficult verse. We won't go into it. Asher be'eretz Kanan bevo mipadan Aram vayichan et pnei ha'ir. Do you hear that? He comes to Shechem, which is Eretz Kanan. As soon as this is the first stop. As soon as he's back from Aram. Vayichan et pnei ha'ir, from the word machane, he sets up a military camp. He attacks the city. Okay, then listen to the next pasuk. Vayiken et chelkat ha'sadeh, and he purchases. Now, do you hear the? This is a pun, not a pun. It's a homonym being used. Vayichan et pnei ha'ir. He attacks the face of the city. At the same time, vayiken et chelkat ha'sadeh, he purchases the part of the fields asher natam sham o'alo, where he put down his tents, miyad b'nei chamor avi shechem. You hear what's going on? He purchases it from the children of Chamor, who was the father of Shechem. What do you have to tell us that for? Why don't you just tell us it's the brothers of Shechem? Because they're trying to point out that these brothers are distinct and separate from Shechem, the brother who will meet because he kidnaps and rapes Dina. So it's interesting what's going on. He's got the sons of Chamor that he's making deals with, that are willing to sell him property in that land of Shechem. Then he's got Shechem itself that obviously is not about to come out at all. The city is probably closed, and Yaakov sets up a camp to attack the city. So right there you can see a schism among the children of Chamor. Even the language there is indicative, because it uses a very strange language to define them. It says, Miyad b'nei Chamor avi Shechem. The father of Chamor, the children of Chamor, who by the way is the father of Shechem, trying to show you that Shechem is a significant power in and of himself. So here, too, I think the same thing's going on. And I don't want to go into it too detailed, but I think that there's, again, the schism that we've seen before in Shechem. If we read carefully, take a look what it says in Pasuk Kaf Chet, in chapter 9 of Shoftim. Vayomer Gal ben Evin, mi avimelech umi Shechem ki na'avdenu, halo ben Yerubal uzvul pekido. He's just the son of Yerubal, and he's got this lousy general named Zvul. Ivdu et anshei chamor avi Shechem. Do you see that? Same language. Same language that's used by Yaakov. So my guess here is that the tables are turned. The children of Shechem are the ones that actually finally cut a deal with Yaakov. They're the ones who set up this not quite Judaism. The children of, no, Shechem himself cut the deal, right? Shechem and Chamor were both at the deal with Yaakov. But it was Shechem who accepted upon himself to be circumcised. And the assumption is everybody in the city, the people in the city were all controlled by Shechem. So when they come back to Shechem, that's really Shechem's descendants. What he's saying now is, dump the people who want to support. There's apparently there's clearly schism going on in Shechem. How do we know that? Because otherwise Zvul wouldn't be able to survive the city. Zvul is hanging out in the city. Huh? Only that, we see the words of Gal ben Eved, this interloper into Shechem, who says, who's this son of Yerubal, this guy, get rid of him, and who's this general, some idiot named same Zvul? Yet Zvul is clearly, how do we know that Zvul is still okay in power-wise? Let's continue on with the verses in chapter 9. 31, he sends a message to Avimelech. In 32, says he tells him to get up at night, and now we're up to 33. V'hayah b'boker, it was in the morning, v'kizroel ha-shemesh, just at dawn, or maybe at night. Tashkim, ufashat tata'ir, you should get up, and at exactly when the sun is rising, that's when you should attack the city. V'nehu v'am asherito yotzim elecha, they're going to go, and they're going to make war with you. You do whatever you want with him. So he does exactly what he's told to do in Lamed Dalet. Lamed Hey. So Gal ben Eved goes, and he's checking out. He's at the gate to the city. He wants to see before he takes his army out whether there's a trap. He's a suspicious guy, appropriately so. And now Avimelech sees that the gate doors are open. It's time for Avimelech to get up. Vayar galat ha'am, he sees the nation. Vayomer Zvul, who does he talk to? He's talking to Zvul. So Zvul, the same guy who is insulting. No, but he's insulting Zvul. But he figures, oh, now that I've taken over control of the city, Zvul will play along with me. But as you can see, there's all kinds of power bases going on here in Shechem. We'll see, there's more power bases as we go on. So Shechem is very much a divided city. And I think, although I'm not sure, that if we create a division between Anshei Shechem and Anshei Chamor, Avi Shechem, then that Pasuk 28 works out nicely. You don't have to go with that, but I think it matches pretty closely with what's going on by Yaakov also, because Yaakov purchasing the stuff from the children of Chamor and making war against Shechem, the child of Chamor, I think we see for a long time this is a schism with the Shechemites. You don't have to go with it, but it certainly simplifies the reading of verse 28. Now, with all of that, let's go back to the comparison. The fourth comparison... Oh, the third comparison I'm not so convinced of it, but I put it down anyway. Vayetsu ha-sadeh, vayivtsu ha-karmehem, vayidchu vayasu hilulim. They go out, it's a whole field story. I'm going to go out and I'm going to harvest my field. What am I doing with my field? I do hilulim, some form of bacchanal avodah zara worship. The fields that we're familiar with in Gidon's time were the fact that the fields were totally destroyed, and Gidon goes out to try to salvage whatever wheat and crops he can from the fields, if to do nothing else but to bring them into Pesach. So I think there's this dichotomy of the use of the land. Again, this is you know, by itself it's tenuous, but supported by all these other things, some of which are very solid, it creates this whole dichotomy between the two characters, Avimelech, the son of Gidon. Let's go to the next one. This one is very clear. Umi tena amazed. This is drunk Gal ben Eved talking, and he's saying, "Who will give me this nation, Biadi? Give me the people of Shechem. Give me your arms. Line up behind me." Vasirat Avimelech. I'll get rid of this guy that you don't like anyway, Avimelech. Vayomer Avimelech, and he says to Avimelech. And by the way, he never says to Avimelech, right? He can't because Avimelech is in a different city, and he gets a messenger, so he doesn't say it to Avimelech. He's like speaking to. I don't know.
People, I don't think that's so tenuous. I mean,
what's that?
That's what you say. It's like Saddam in Baghdad saying, "George Bush, you're finished."
Exactly right. Yes, yes, yes. Exactly right. Exactly right. Vayomer Avimelech, Rabet Savacha Vatseya. gather together your armies, make them great, and come out. It's a very strange lashon, but it's very interesting compared to Gideon. Look what it says by Gideon. Vayomer Hashem al Gideon, Rav. See that connection? Rav Amasher Itcha. You got too many soldiers. Mititi at Midian Biadan. Pei Yiparer Alai Yoloi Mor. Yadi Oshia Li. So you have this this thing where Gideon plays the idea that he's not going to win by mass show of force, but he's going to win by strategy and belief in God. And this Gal Ben Eved is telling to Avimelech, oh yeah, you think you're so great, so get together all your forces. And the assumption, by the way, is Gideon does. Gideon does gather together his massive forces. So you have this idea of this dichotomy between the way war is waged between the two characters. Lo'od, let's do the next one.
Well, it wasn't Gideon's idea to shrink the force.
Correct. Yo, you're right. And the fact that God is so interwoven in the war, and that's the point I want to get to. God is all over the place in Gideon. God is incredibly absent in Avimelech. Now, you would expect him to be absent in Avimelech, but I'll show you that there's a reason why you would expect him to be there, and he's not. And I'll get to that by the end of the year. Let's take a look, though, at the next one. Vayikach et ha'am vayechatzam l'shlosha roshim vayerav b'sadeh. That is Avimelech. Now it's actually a two-part war. So let's go back to the Pesukim and let me show you the two-part war. This would be verse, and I'm sorry, I know this isn't one of those big Chidushim Shirim. I just feel that we should learn Pasuk by Pasuk chapter 9. When we get to Yiftach, there's all kinds of interesting things going on. But Avimelech essentially is a loser and I want to dispatch him as quickly as possible. So essentially, Gideon gets up from his Marav, and in Pasuk 36, so Gal sees them, and he says to Zvul, Hinei Am Yored Mirasharim, I see a nation. And by the way, Am in this case doesn't mean a nation, it means an army, a host. Vayomer Elav Zvul, Zvul says, Etzel Harim Ataroe Kanashim, the shadows of the thing. Now keep in mind, it's early dawn, so the sun is behind them, right? So you can't see. Anybody who's been in tanks knows that it's a famous thing. What helicopters always try to do to tanks is helicopters and airplanes always attack from sun side, always, because you can't see them. You can't see them, you're blinded. It's a famous thing. You always have to watch when you're a tank person. You always have to watch your sun side because you can't, you're blinded. You're literally blind. Always put the sun behind you. This is a famous army tactic. Well, you also have this kind of, anybody been in the Shomron? So in the summer, you get these clouds, right, that disappear by half hour after dawn. You don't see it so much, Yerushalayim, such a built-up city. But if you go up to Shiloh, I remember this, because I remember two distinctive things. Once, it didn't rain the whole summer. The first summer I was there, it didn't rain, and I found it shocking. Correct, but I didn't know this. I'm some 16-year-old kid in Israel. What did I know? I remember every morning over Shiloh, there'd be these, which is only a little bit south of Shechem, every morning there would be these clouds. And it would look like it would rain, because they were sort of grayish clouds, very low level. And then, in about a half an hour after dawn, the sun was so hot that they all burnt away. So I remember this very well.
I was in
1984. That was the first summer that YU took boys to Shiloh.
And I was there in 87.
Oh, did you
for
really?
For the summer.
With Rabbi Rackman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I was the first year in 84. I was with Scott Jude. So we have something to talk about. We should talk about that also.
It's a nice yeshiva now, I heard.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. I don't know, remember the sloping mountains, and every morning you'd have these clouds in the morning in the very early dawn. We'd all get up in the morning to go to the Beit Medrash. So there's the clouds, there's the sun, there's shadows. And in war, you make mistakes. So a lot of people are...
Wasn't Avimelech supposed to be in the Sadeh?
He was at Mithi.
Did Zvul tell him to lay out in the Sadeh?
Yes, and the word Sadeh is important. But keep in mind, what you have, essentially, is you've got the two mountains, Har Ebal and Har Gerizim. You've got the city in between them, so the gates of the city are facing south. And he is south of that in the fields area, in that area. But it's not flatlands. There's no flatlands in the area. If I can show you a map here quickly.
Gal is saying that they're coming down from the hill.
Yeah, that's correct, because that's where they are. The fields are hilly. Let me see if I can find a topographical map here. There's no flatlands by Shechem. It's not there. It's one mountain after the other. On the way from Shiloh north, there's simply no flatlands. What's that? It's all Har Ephraim. Yeah, you really have no flatlands. I don't have a topographical map right with me. Oh, yeah, I do. Hold on. Here. this pretty much demonstrates it fairly well. And what you're seeing is Har Ebal is a little bit to the southeast, Har Gerizim to the northwest, or I'm reversing it. And you can see essentially in this topographical map where Avimelech is hiding. There's a little field there, but essentially it's one mountain after another. It's hard to see what's going on. It's a good place for traps.
Is Avimelech just like a fool? Like, to be like a person who at least knew what an army was.
Well, he's doing a great job. He's about to attack and win.
I know, but like still, I mean, like, why would anybody ever think they could get away with telling him this? Like, no, it's shadows. It's like,
oh, that's not, no, he's not speaking to Avi Mouse. He's speaking to Gal.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean,
go.
Well,
Gal's a fool. Oh, Gal's a drunk fool.
Why is Gal telling Avi Mouse?
No, he's not. Avimelech is not in the city. Avimelech is not in Shechem. He's outside of Shechem. He's
ready to attack.
Even though he ruled in Shechem, that only meant that his capital city was Shechem. He was actually in a different place. We'll find out soon. He's in a different. He lives in a different place. Gal ben Ebed has taken over the city, and Zvul was the general of Avimelech, who Gal thinks he's been convinced to come over. Right. So let's continue on. So he says, "Now you don't see any people. You see shadows there, buddy." So Lamed Zion, Gal looks on, and he said, wait a second, I see them coming from Tabur Ha'aretz. Now Tabur Ha'aretz means the umbilical cord of the land. So it varies before Shem, but you could assume it's that straight path that comes right into Shechem, in between Har Gerizim and Har Ebal. So essentially, they're coming straight, there's nothing to be missed. Rosh Echad Ba, Miderech Elon, Mitzanim. Now wait a second, I skipped something. Oh, go back to 34. Vayakam Avimelech Chol Am Asherim Mo Laila, Vayervu Im Shechem Arba Rashim. Remember? Gidon had three Rashim. Avimelech makes four Rashim. Now, if you remember what I mentioned in that class, is the purpose of three Rashim is always to leave an escape route. The purpose of four Rashim is to leave no way out. That means you have an army east, west, north, and south. The goal of that army is not to allow people to escape or to cause confusion. The goal of that army is to slaughter anybody who's close by. That's the goal of a four-pronged army. Gidon left an opening space, and God probably told him to, or he understood it intuitively, because you wanted to leave them room for the rocket to shoot out, otherwise they fight back. If you corner a rat, it's going to fight. If you leave it room to scurry out, then you never know what might happen. He sort of learns from his father, but he creates four Rashim, because his goal is not to allow them to scurry back in the city. His goal is to destroy them completely, although he fails. He fails at it. Let's continue on in 38. And now Zvul makes fun of Gal. He says, "Vayomer lav Zvul, ayei efo picha? Where's your big mouth?" That's essentially what it means. Asher tomar, that you said, "Miavi melech kinavdenu." Who is Avimelech who served? Hello, Zam Asher ma'astabo. This is the armies that you made fun of, that you said you disrespected. Say na atav elachembo. So now you got to put your money where your mouth is. Go out and make war. Vayetze Gal lefnei balei Shechem. So he goes out before them. Vayilachem Avimelech. He defroeth Avimelech. Vayanas pinav. He beats them. He managed to get to the gate of the city, but not into the city. And then he goes back home. He goes back to Arumah, which is where the city he was, because he failed to conquer the city. He wipes out Gal ben Eved, yeah. But the city is in rebellion against him, and the city gates are closed. And Zvul manages to get rid of... See, it's weird. Zvul manages... Apparently Gal survived the war. He gets back into the city, survives the city. Zvul, who you would think is a general of Avimelech, gets rid of Gal. So you would think that means that Avimelech is back in Shechem, but he's not. He's going to come and attack Shechem. The gates are still closed to him. So there's this weird, there's all kinds of power struggles going on. If Zvul is supporting Avimelech, then Avimelech should be able to walk in happy to the city. If Zvul is not supporting Avimelech, he should have been kicked out with Gal. So there's all kinds of factions that you could detect here going on in Shechem.
Well,
it's a very factionist place.
Well, maybe it's like Afghanistan, where they keep changing sides.
But even if you want to say that Zvul changed, if it's just Avimelech versus Gal ben Eved, that as soon as Zvul gets rid of Gal ben Eved, that means he's changed sides, he's back on the sides of Avimelech, and Avimelech walks back in, but that's
maybe
not... Oh, then he changed back?
No, that's what they do.
Yeah, well, it could be.
Yeah,
I see this as more multi-factious. I'm thinking that Zvul doesn't like Gal, but he likes Baalei Shechem enough. He knows where his bread is buttered, so he's going to support Baalei Shechem that don't like Avimelech.
But where does
Zvul just like sort of what you're saying? But like Gal is nobody. Like it doesn't seem that anybody else seems to see that Zvul is not on Gal's side. Like everyone seems to think that Zvul is like this loyal helping hand of Gal.
So you think he underhandedly got rid of Gal and his brothers?
Underhandedly, he sits there and sees Gal lost, so as any second-in-command does when their leader fails, takes him out, and then he assumes power.
That's a good view.
And then he decides he's going to take over, he doesn't need Avimelech.
That's a very valid view, and it takes away the factionist idea of what's going on in Shechem. I believe, from Pasuk 28 that the idea to see multiple factions and confusing in Shechem is a better read. But I'm not saying that it's impossible to see that. I think that does make sense.
Your proof that Avimelech didn't have control of the city is that it just says he v'blu chalalim rabim ad petach hashar.
Yeah, but no. And then we're going to go on to the next part. He's still fighting against Shechem. We'll see. Vayhi, this is Pasuk 42. Vayhi mimacharav vayetzei amasadeh. Ve'agidu l'Avimelech. So Avimelech is not in town. The people go out on the next day to the Sadeh. Now here's something important here. They're not going out. This is a little weird. They're not going out to war. The assumption is that they're going out to do whatever it is that they do in the fields. Although it's not clear from this pasuk whether they're going out to make war. Why would they be going out to make war? There's nobody to make war against. And certainly if he's camped out around, that is, it's, who's camped out around the city? Avimelech is camped out around the city, except for the fact that Avimelech actually, in Pasuk 41, he went back to Arumah. But the assumption is that he's left soldiers there. He's left somebody there, you would think, or maybe not. Maybe he's abandoned the city. So the people see that Avimelech has gone back home, so they're going to come out to the field, not to make war with Avimelech, because they don't know, Zvul is gone. There's no more, sorry, not Zvul. Gaal ben Eved is gone. So the whole act of rebellion is gone. People are a little bit disarrayed. They've just lost a lot of people. They're not going to go out to war. Avimelech has gone home. The assumption is that when it says that they went out to the fields, the assumption here is that they're actually going out to the fields. That is, they're going out to
work.
It's the it's still crop time. It's vineyard time. So you're talking about late August, August and late August, early September is when the grapes come up in Shomron. So they've gone out to work. So here, this is Avimelech. He gets the three. He creates three. Four didn't work so well, but now he's going to try three. Now, I can't tell you here what's the difference, why he's more successful with three than he was with four. I don't know. What I can tell you is that he's not attacking an army. Avimelech is not attacking an army, and that's important. You'll see why that's important, and it's going to be emphasized later. He's not. As far as he's concerned, Shechem is calmed down. There's no reason to assume he's won the war. He attacked on Shechem. They wouldn't let him in. But essentially, you got a whole bunch of workers coming out, unarmed, into the fields. And Avimelech attacks. So you get this, and he creates these three heads, just like his father did. But his father was attacking the Midianite army, and Avimelech is attacking a bunch of people working in the vineyard. So again, you get this dichotomy with the connection being the three heads. Gidon made the three-headed battle, and Avimelech makes the three-headed battle. So let's continue on. They once again set ambushes in the field. Now this can't be the same day, right? This is not the same day. If they go out the next day into the field to work, and then Avimelech hears about it, and then he sets ambushes in the fields, that means that they went back in, right? They went out to the fields, they did some work, they went back in. Avimelech said, they're going to be coming out to the fields tomorrow to do their work. So now I'll set up. So at least one day has passed, at least. Vayar vihinei am yotzei min ha'ir, vayakam aleihem vayakem. He destroys them. He destroys these people working in the field.
Which vayakem, what's the source
of that? Lakot. Yaket lakot, to hit.
Okay.
He hits them. In the military sense, it means to really strike, I guess. Yeah, that would be a good thing. Vavimelech varashim asheri mo. Now this is a very difficult pasuk. You could see the problem with this pasuk. I'm not sure what to do with it. Vavimelech varashim asheri mo. Avimelech and the groups that were with him. Pashtu v'yamdu petach hashar ha'ir. So this time he's not going to make a mistake. This time, instead of attacking the people, he goes right for the open gates. Now holds open the portcullis, essentially. Ushnei Arashim Pashtua Kol Asher B'Sadeh, and he left two others to simply destroy everybody who was in the field, which he's already got in the city. There's nobody left out in the city except for workers. You can't say he's holding them hostage because he's already got the gates. He's walking into the city. So he's left two of Rashim for no other purpose than slaughtering these people in the fields. Oh, that's a question. So how can you say that he took the Rashim plural with him if there were two Rashim out in the fields that only leaves one? I don't know, I can tell you what the Mefarshim say. The Mefarshim say don't read the word Rashim that came with him, meaning the army hosts. Read it as the heads of the army. And so the word Rashim is used two different ways in this pasuk. The first way means people, Roshei Ha'am. And the second one is actually Rashim, meaning a battle battalion. That's what the Mefarshim say. I don't know what to tell you, because obviously the math doesn't work out. The Mefarshim are confused by it, and I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how to solve the problem.
More than that, it's specifically pointing out that he starts with three, and it's using this word in the plural.
That's
correct. Almost like there's a reason for doing it this way.
I you're right. It bothers me. I was not able to find any papers that addressed it without changing the word Rashim that went with Gidon, Avimelech. And I couldn't come up with anything myself. Feel free to...
It makes sense that he just, like, got rid of it. Like, he had a whole army set up, like, these four groups of armies that are set up from the last battle. He just, like,
re-raged them into three. I think the reason why it rearranges into three, and here I'm on delicate ground, but I want to say anyway that the reason why he rearranged them into three was in order to draw the... I'm not sure he rearranged them into three. It could be that Shmuel rearranged them into three in order to make the comparison between Gideon, his father, with three, and Avimelech with three. Now, that's a difficult thing to say, because you never want to take a look at something which is a historical fact and say Shmuel, the author, was tweaking the facts just a bit.
What if he lost one in the first battle?
What's that?
He lost one of the Russians.
Yeah, it's not described that way. Yeah.
What
look,
about
it could be
what
a
if it's actually a two-part thing? What if Avimelech and all three of the Rashim, Asherimo, Pashtuviam du Petach Shahar Ir,
Ushnei Rashim,
and then two
and then
of them,
he sent out
another
two.
Yeah, it could be a two-part.
Okay, it sounds like a division, rather. It sounds like there's a set division in his host. I'm not sure what to make out of all these battles. I don't think we have enough. I'm not a skilled military analyst. I looked at the dot-micro was not particularly helpful. I don't know. There's obviously some questions here. I'm tempted to say, and I know it's risky, but I'm tempted to say that the reason why he made the three is he probably had four like he always had. Certainly from Pasuk Mem Dalet, it seems like he has four or more. I think maybe Shmuel made a comparison to three to make sure we're not missing the Gideon Avimelech connections. You could like it or not like it. One way or the other, though, you have to solve this problem. Let's continue on. Memhei. Vavimelech nimcham ba'ir, he fights the city, v'chol asher hu, v'yilkod et ha'ir, he conquers the city, v'tam asher bo, harag v'yitotz et ha'ir, Vayizrael Melach. Now again, there we have Vayitotz Ta'ir. So here, let's compare it. Of course, you should recognize that word from Gideon. So let's look at Vayitotz. That would be item number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He destroys the whole city. And by the way, we're about to see that he destroys women and children. He is totally. We'll see by the end of this, women and children. Indiscriminately dead.
What's Vayitotz?
Vayitotz means he knocks it down. Mm-hmm. Now look at Gideon.
He plants it with salt.
And he sows it with salt. I'll explain what that means in a second, but you probably already know.
Back,
yeah, essentially he destroys the city to the point where it's not redeemable. Look, though, in Vayitotz Ha'ir, that same Vayitotz is used by Gideon. And, of course, where Gideon takes over a city, should mind you, the two cities that refused to support Gideon, which were Sukkot and Pnuel. But if you remember, we learned that there was a difference between the two cities. So let's read them. Here's Zevatonah that you made fun of me saying. You shamed me saying. We're not going to support you. You haven't conquered Zevatonah. We're not going to give you any bread. So Gideon comes back victorious. So if you remember, we learned that by Sukkot, the whole city wanted to support Gideon. The officers of the city were against Gideon, and therefore Gideon does not indiscriminately destroy the whole city. He goes only after the officers. Remember, he gets the person, he says, tell me, give me the list of the officers who went against me. He's very, very careful. Remember, we did that, I don't know how many people were here, but we were very careful. Exactly the people, even though the whole city did not rebel, he took specifically the people that did not support him, he destroyed them.
Surgical.
But by Pnuel, yes, very surgical, only to the guilty.
Oh my God.
Well, he's a Shofet, he's only the guilty. By Ikach, I'm saying, where next? That Migdal Pnuel Natas. Now, if you remember, Pnuel was all the people of Pnuel that went against Gideon. By Arog et Anshei Ha'ir, he destroys the people in the city.
Anshei
so by
Anshei
Ha'ir, Anshei, first of all, it implies men. Second of all, I want to read you something very interesting. If I remember this correctly, no, it'll take me too long to find, but if I'm not mistaken, it says in the Targum, it implies just the leaders also. But I don't want to take the time. But certainly it's not, even if you want to say he destroyed all of Pnuel, and it's certainly not indicative that he destroyed women and children also. By the connection of the Sukkot versus the Pnuel, it's clearly he feels that the guilty deserve to be punished also. But he doesn't insult the city with Melech. By essentially sowing the city with Melech, he's essentially saying nothing else will grow here. That's essentially what happens. There's no crops will grow. I'm not sure, I'm not an expert on these things, but I assume for a very long, long, long time, the salt gets into the soil. They have there are issues like this in California and other places where the salt starts to draw in from the sea and starts to get involved in the soil and things stop growing and So here the comparison is clear. Whereas Avimelech destroys the city completely and everybody in it, and shows it was sold so it can't be rebuilt, Gidon does not. So again, you have this comparison between an indiscriminate killer and between somebody who's wielding justice. And that's a big difference between Avimelech and Gidon.
There's no one to teach a lesson to here. They're all dead.
No, he's teaching a lesson to the other people in his kingdom. He's saying that they should have never even thought of supporting Gaal.
Yeah.
And they didn't try to stop Gaal. They didn't speak up for him. What's his name? The general, Zavul?
Yeah.
Zavul was the only guy who stood up. Nobody else in the city tried to stop them. So he's teaching the rest of the people to teach them a lesson.
Don't
mess with me.
And I'd like to take it a step further. First of all, I think that's true, and it's a harsh statement to make. It's a very Saddam Hussein thing. But if you agree with my perspective about the difference between Anshei Shechem and Anshei Hamor, that they're factions in the city, Gidon is making no...
Avimelech.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to erase this. I'm going to have to re-record over this. So when you hear this, it'll be like that Lotto commercial. Today is $3 million. So you hear, and now you know that Avimelech said, if it's true there are factions, Avimelech is making no distinctions in the factions. If I'm correct about the factions, he's wiping everybody out. We'll see. You'll get to the women and children soon. He just kills everybody. Let's continue on. V'yashvu kol balei migdal shechem. By the way, he doesn't destroy everybody. They all, in Memvav, which is verse 46, they all back out to the Migdal Shechem, which is the
fortress.
I was going to bring a picture, by the way, of Lachish. Lachish is a famous city that Sennacherib destroyed on his first match in March in the year 701. 701 is when he destroyed Lachish. And you can see the way the cities were built. They were built with an outside wall, and inside there was an inner fortress built as a two-stage development. And we have archaeological finds, and not only that, Sennacherib on the way back, remember, he didn't conquer Chizkiyahu. We'll get to that when we do Malachim. He failed to conquer Chizkiyahu. He goes back home, and he's killed sometime later, and this is a historical fact. It's not only written in the Torah, he's killed sometimes later, and his son Esarhaddon takes over, Esarhaddon. He actually drew a picture. There's a picture of Lachish. I mean, literally, perfectly drawn, that was found in, I think it was about 1920, in one of the palaces of Sennacherib. It was taken completely, or in pieces, really. It was broken in pieces, but it was taken to the Museum of London. It's there now, and essentially, it's a photograph of Lachish. And you have the outer wall, and then you have the inner tower, which matches the archaeological find exactly. So I was going to show you that there's this idea of city within a city. But let's continue on. Let's see what happens, because we're almost finished with him. So they all go to Tzariach. Tzariach means they go to the inner tower. Tzariach, by the way, in modern Hebrew, is used for a turret. A tank turret is called a Tzariach.
Hmm.
Was Shushan built like that? There was the outer city, and then there was the palace.
I know the palace had three levels, but I don't know if it was a fortress. But very likely. I wouldn't be surprised if whole cities were based on that same concept. I don't think the Jews came up with it first. And they tell him... It's very funny, by the way. It's always they're telling him, "Vayu God Avimelech." Right? What is he doing in between battles? I mean, what is it? Is he sleeping in between battles? There's a sense of like immense passivity, right? Like I don't know what's going on. Vayal Avimelech Har Tzalmon. So it goes to Har Tzalmon. It's hard to say whether it is one of the mountains near Shechem. Hu v'chol am asher yitov. Vayikach Avimelech et Har Dumot biyado. He takes axes, Har Dumot, axes in his hands. Vayichrot sochot etzim. He takes sticks. He knocks down trunks. Vayisane carries him, vayasem al shechmo, he takes him on his shoulder. Vayomer la ham asherimo, mari item asiti, whatever you see me do, maru asu kamoni. Who does this sound exactly like, by the way? Gidon. Let's take a look. This is in the third from the bottom of the Gidon. Lilimimeni tiru kendasu. What you see me do, that's with the torches and the battle and fighting for God. So exactly what you see. See, now the connections are becoming much more solid. So it creates this sort of it creates this tapestry of thesis and antithesis, Gidon versus Avimelech. So as opposed to you see what I do, attack the enemies and succeed, you do what I do, let's burn the city down. So you get this kind of evil twin.
The Lord of the Rings.
What's that?
Sounds like the latest Lord of the Rings.
Oh, don't tell me, I didn't see it.
Oh.
I'm waiting for the DVD. I'm waiting for the DVD. So, Mari Itam Asiti, Maru Asu Kamoni, Vechutu Gam, even the language, Maharu Asu Kimoni is almost identical. Vechutu Kalam Akhlot Se Socho, they each took sticks, you know, they cut down Socho, which are like the trunks. Vechimu Atzariach, Vechitu Alem Atzariach, Vech, Vechamutu Kol Anche, Migdal Shchem Ke Elef Ish Vishah. 1,000 men and women. He didn't care, he's going to burn everybody, he's going to toast everybody in that Migdal. It didn't make a difference to him. The whole city is gone. There's nothing left. It's dead. It's just a dead city. It's amazing, you know, the contrast, really, between Gidon and Avimelech. To continue on, the next part's this way. You know, I like
to
get through
to
10.
The idea that the apple doesn't fall far from the very far.
It's a famous parak in Yechezkel. How is it possible that a tzaddik gives birth to a rasha? Rasha tzaddik. You say the same thing by Chizkiah. We'll get there by Malachim. The more important question is Manasseh, right? Manasseh, the evil son of Chizkiah. And not only that, the other way, Chizkiah was the son of Achaz, one of the worst Oved Avodah Zarah. So how do you get these dichotomies where one good son, where a son becomes so evil after the father is so good and vice versa? So something we'll discuss when we get to Malachim. But what about the other way? It's like when I've never smoked. My parents were heavy smokers, so I'll never smoke. So maybe Chizkiah saw Achaz, he said, I don't want to be like that. So I guess you could come up with whatever psychology you want, but we'll learn a little Yechezkel also, he'll talk about it. Let's continue on. This way we can finish up Perek 10, and we call it Teveitz. So he goes to another city called Teveitz. Now we see that there's rebellion after rebellion. Now it's hard to see where Teveitz is. Modern archaeologists put it on the road north of Shechem, going towards Beit Shan, going to the valley in Beit Shan. But it's another walled city. Vayicham b'Teveitz v'Yilkada, he captures it. Umigdal Oz Hayah b'toch ha'ir. They had this great tower, this great, not even a tower, it was a fortress. Vayanusu sham kol anashim v'anashim kol balei ha'ir. Everybody runs inside. Vayazgru b'adam, they lock the doors behind them. Vayalu al gaga migdal, they go up to the roof of this tower. Vayavo avi melech ad migdal vayilachem bo, he fights against it. Vayigash ad petach migdal v'sarfo b'esh. So he's going to do the old burn the tower down too. Worked well the first time, let's try it again. Unfortunately, this time they know his plan. Vayishlach vatashlech isha achat pelach rechev. She takes a grindstone. That's the top grind of the grindstone.
That's really heavy.
Yeah, it's really heavy.
How did she manage that?
I sometimes when you have to do it, you just have to do it. My guess is she shoved it over the side. Not only that, it didn't do full contact with his head either. Because if it did, he wouldn't be talking, and he's about to talk. So my guess is it was a close call, and it caught him a pretty good shot on the head. Vayikra. Now here again, we have
fortress, and she got other people to help.
Okay, then Avimelech wouldn't be so upset because Avimelech is about to say, I don't want anybody to say that a woman killed me.
David lectures you later on about it.
What school does
where? What do you mean?
With,
I'm sorry.
With Bathsheba's husband.
Uriah.
Where he says, how could you walk so close to the city? Don't you know the story that happened where a woman threw the stone?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, you're right. That's the criticism of Yoav against...
David against Yoav.
Yeah, even though he sent them there. Yeah. Well, that gets complicated because essentially David wanted that city attacked. No, it's Yoav against David. Yoav sent a letter back to David. If I'm not mistaken, we'll take a look afterwards. Yoav says, David, why did you do such a stupid battle plan of attacking the city? Don't you remember the story by Avimelech? It's the other way because that was the conflict there. We'll get there when we get to Shmuel Bet. Gidol, it's very interesting. It applies to today also. Yoav is sitting outside the city around Rabat Abayamon. He wants to starve them out. That's his policy. Don't attack. Don't send in forces. You interdict, and eventually they'll come out. And David's like, "What are you talking about? I took Yerushalayim by force, and I'll take Rabat force." It's a real. It's not just a battle about a woman. It's a battle about strategy. But we'll do that when we get to Shmuel Bet. So let's continue. Vayikra mahir al nar nosei kelav. So he calls his nar. Vayomer lo shloch rochar b'chal motetini. Come, draw your sword and kill me. Penyarula yishai hertani. I don't want to see a woman kill me. But draw nar oviyamo. Very anti-feminist. Vayiru, so he pulls the sword, he kills him. Vayiru ish Yisrael ki meit Avimelech. And now, only now, by the way, do we know he has support from the Jews. Only in this pasuk, at the very end, do we see that it's not just Shechem which is supporting him, but it's ish Yisrael which is supporting him. Vayiru ish Yisrael ki meit Avimelech. Vayiru ish from come home. Time to go home. Avimelech is dead. Let's go home.
Well, wasn't he the Jewish king?
He was, but you would think. But the impression was he only had support from the non-Jewish Shechem, but it's not true. Here it's quite clear. They had support from Jews as well.
Army.
What?
Yeah,
you could also say they had a non-Jewish army, but it's not. And that would make the whole story nicer. Oh, we don't have to worry about Avimelech once it's such a scar in the face of the Jewish people because he wasn't even ruling over the Jews. He didn't have a Jewish army. He was all Shechemites because he was talking to his mother who was taken from Shechem. Not true. He was supported by the Jews. It's not something that we could so easily dismiss and say Avimelech was a non-Jewish schism. No, he was supported by Jews.
Again, just like Saddam.
Yeah.
As Republican guards heard he was dead, they all ran out of town.
I think it's also greed here. Yeah, it's all greed. It's also greed. Vayashev Elohim et ra'at Avimelech, and then God returns the thing, and he just like the Kilat ben Yotam ben Yubal. And here's the interesting thing. Again, the comparisons. Let's take a look at the last two comparisons, and with that, we'll call it a day. Right? Avimelech tells them, have a nice day. We're almost finished. You're really not missing much. And I want to finish up the last comparisons. He says to his nar, I want you to take your sword out and kill me. Now, if you remember, Gideon said the same thing to his nar, not to kill him, but to kill Zebach and Salmonai. He goes to his nar and he says, take out your sword and kill these two guys. Right? And what does the nar say? I don't want to. What does he say at the very last comparison? Vayomer liyetu b'choro, he tells his firstborn, Kuma rogotam. By the way, we said that the nar doesn't mean he's just a young boy, because yetu b'choro must have been an older boy. V'lo shalaf anar chabo kiare, he didn't listen to his father, he was very scared. Kiodeno nar, this is a little nar. So you see his comparison with somebody who was not so quick to pull the trigger, as opposed to nar of Himelech, is happy to kill even the king. This also compares against Shaul. Do you remember when Shaul tells his nar to kill him, his nar says, no, I won't do it. I won't do it. So then he falls on his own sword, and then the nar sees it and he kills himself. But the nar won't kill the king, as opposed to Avimelech's nar, who is more than happy to dispatch the king. And not only that, he's afraid that people will say, a woman will kill me. Those are more or less the same words that came out of not of Gideon, but Zebach and Salmona. We want you, Gideon, to kill us, because ki ish givurato, a true man should kill us, which means that Avimelech's philosophies are closer to the philosophies of the Midianites, Zebach and Salmona, than the philosophies of his father. So with all these comparisons, we create this thesis and antithesis, where essentially Avimelech sort of undoes everything that you would expect.